Hi, everyone. Welcome to the TimingResearch.com Crowd Forecast News, episode number 216 for March 11th, 2019. If you have not had a chance to look at today's report yet, we are going to be discussing number 285, which you should be seeing on the screen now while I'm talking. You can also get your copy by going to TimingResearch.com/reports, and you can download either the PDF version or look at the web version there. We are broadcasting live on YouTube at 1 p.m. Eastern time, but I am also making the audio-only podcast version of all episodes available on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, and wherever else people listen to podcasts. So just search for Timing Research and subscribe there. My name is David Cosmeter. I'm the creator of Timing Research, and I have Michael Filigera back to moderate today. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Michael.
Thank you, David, and good afternoon to those on the East Coast, and good morning to those here out West. I am Michael Filigera. I am with Logical Signals. And today for our show, we have AJ Brown of TradingTrader.com. And yep. We have Jim Penny of OptionProfessor.com. And what we'd like to do to start is that I'm going to do round robin. We'll start with you, AJ, and then Jim, and then myself. And let's give a brief introduction of who we are and what we do, and then we'll move on.
Absolutely. My name is AJ Brown. I'm the founder and president of TradingTrainer.com. And we've been doing options education since 2002. And really focusing these days, we have our full-time options. Option traders, we have our program, our flagship program, but these days we're really excited about our premium selling program. We call it the Instant Income Calendar. With that said, do you want me to go ahead and answer the question about S&P 500, where we think it'll go in the next few days?
Nope, we'll do that on our next round. We're just going to do some intros. That was very good, by the way. I liked it. I'm interested in that new program.
Thank you.
So maybe we can hear more about that in a little bit. Jim?
Yeah, I'm the content provider at OptionProfessor.com, educational firm on the uses and risks of options, using them for income and cash flow purposes, hedging purposes, which I think is very, very important. And then, of course, for limited risk speculation. Every week we have a podcast on Friday, and at optionprofessor.com is where the link is every week. And we obviously encourage people to attend the podcast every week.
And thank you. And again, I'm Michael Filigera. I'm with logicalsignals.com. That is my own website, which kind of remains stagnant at the moment as I spend more time with an ex-member of my own trade room and her trade room. We're working on auto traders, and we have some great products coming up, and so I'll be able to fill in that. But I will say that I'm a little bit excited about today's show because we have two really good option traders and option content providers. And so I'm going to be very interested to maybe ask a couple of questions that relate to options. And I'm looking forward to that. So let's go ahead and begin today's show. And that always starts with the same basic question. And that is, what direction do we believe that, or do you believe that the market or the S&P will move for the coming week, which is today's opening to Friday's close? So it's going to be higher or lower. And then we'll also include question two, which is that we're going to rate your confidence in that answer to question one. So again, we'll begin with AJ.
Excellent. So despite today's uptick, which it actually started with a big downtick, you know, people were responding to last week's employment numbers, probably responding to Boeing and maybe the potential issues they have with one of their latest revisions of an old plane model, the Boeing 737 MAX 8. Besides those things, we're seeing an unexpected uptick, but still, I'm going to say for the rest of the week, we're heading down. We've hit ourselves against a nice level of resistance there. I look like for all of 2019, I think we're just going to be going sideways, but I think for the next few days, we'll get over today's uptick and we'll head down. My confidence on that is about a 7 out of 10 or 70% confidence that it's on its way back down.
Thank you very much. And Jim.
Yeah, I also agree that the most likely outcome here, because of the moving averages being so sloppy, meaning that your 50-day is underneath the 200-day on so many stocks and so many indexes, that with this kind of a move, you know, the first quarter of this year has seen the biggest move in the NASDAQ in 7 years and the best performance in the S&P in 5 years. That's a very dramatic up move that had totally violated the golden or the the negative crosses that occurred. So I was thinking that it might go sideways here. So there is a gap at 2740 to 2750, and there is some numbers coming up later in the week. So I would think that it could roll back down a little bit to fill that gap a little bit. And so I think, but I think it's like 52%, a little bit higher than not, because if you're in trading range, you could always go up towards 2800 or something like that. So bottom line is I think it might roll over a little bit, but it's not a sure thing because we're in a trading range. It could be choppy, but there is a gap at the 2740 to 2750 that may attract it.
Okay. That's great. For me, this is the trifecta today, because I also believe lower, that the close on Friday will be lower than today. And I'm giving myself about a 65% confidence rating on that occurring. And my reasons are basically very much in line with what's already been stated. I think that there's been too much back and forth across the 200 and the 50, and that it tends to right now just kind of be playing in between, which in my view, that produces that choppy action that Jim just mentioned. I also feel that while the markets may move higher, I don't really see it happening right now because there's just too many other indicators to me that are pointing for at least very near term lower. And having said all that, we shall move on to our next area. But before we actually do that, I would like to just maybe also go around and saying, since we have those questions, are there any other specific reasons that you guys have over and above what it was said, you know, the moving averages, that there are other indicators that are basically pointing down? Because that doesn't seem to have stopped the market at all. Now, again, are we just going to trade within that range? Or are there other things that you're seeing that should begin to pull this down? Like, I know we mentioned the job numbers. I'm still stunned that they decided to go against all of that. But in my view, I saw this starting on Friday afternoon, going into the close. The rally that got produced, particularly in the NASDAQ, was just nonstop, pretty much like what the Dow is doing right now. Now, they're just jumping in and they're just buying. So again, do we really believe that there's that much retail money coming into the markets right now? Or are we seeing something else? And so we're going to go back. Let's go back around and kind of just, we've given our basic reasons, or we've given our percentage of what we feel that we're going to be right or wrong. So now let's kind of fill that in a little bit with specific reasons you think that it's going to be heading in the directions that we're choosing.
So for the Friday uptick, and even some of the uptick today, in my humble opinion, that had a lot to do with how quickly the market sold off Friday morning on the jobs numbers. And so what we're seeing there is simply bargain buying by people who are making quick bucks on the day trading scene. But this overhead resistance at about 2810, that was actually tested back or established back in September and then tested again in October and November. What we saw, of course, you know, was, I call it a transient external stochastic shock. When in December, up until December 28th, when we had that breakdown through support, that of course was all the confusion happening, especially with the U.S. government shutdowns, potential shutdowns, all the drama happening. People just decided to take their money out and put it into their mattress temporarily. And then as soon as that was kind of some of the headlines were abated, if you will, because there's a lot of drama going on in the form of headlines, and investors just get skittish, especially when they don't know whether or not the rules that they're supposed to be following in the game are going to change the next day. And so come January, you know, the beginning of January, that money just returned right back out of the mattresses, right back into that channel. But we finally, after a couple months of back up to that level that we established in the beginning of December, end of November, and that's even more a test of that heavy line of resistance. Basically, people are saying, hey, it doesn't look like it's going to go higher. I've been always told to... And so they're creating that self-fulfilling prophecy. So that's why I think we're not going to be seeing anything above 2800 until there's some real confidence that we can put overall in, you know, our government, our rule, more importantly, the rules and regulations that go in with investing and with running of businesses.
Very well stated. Thank you, AJ. And Jim?
Well, basically, I think on a larger view, the market does have parameters. And I think the parameters right now are pretty solid. as far as the what I think would be important. The high area, 2820, a lot of the Elliott waivers thought that might be the high, but then they increased it to 2940. 2940 is still in the cards as long as a couple of things occur. The transports hit a recent low of 10,000, and they're at 10,274. If that can hold 10,000 and keep going back up, that would be very positive. The Russell went down to 1,500. Now it's well off of that. That's a positive. Retail sales bounced back in January. That's a positive. The S&P VIX could not get above 18 and stay there. That's a positive. And the monthly low on the S&P of 2680, if it can hold up, that's a positive. So that's a lot of positives that I just mentioned. And so basically, I wouldn't get extremely negative on the market until those positives turned into negatives. And I think, this market bouncing back when it drops down is a testimony to the fact that the bulls are still in charge here. And until you take out 10,000 on the transports and take out 1,500 on the Russell and take out 2,680 on the S&P, I wouldn't get terribly negative on the market at all. And like I say, the VIX has had an inability to hold any kind of rally, which is bullish. So, that's how I see it right now.
And I think both of you guys are that's very stellar information. And I hope people are kind of writing down those highlights of those, both of those. And I tend to agree with what has been said, which doesn't leave me much to add, I have to say. But I agree that we do have some resistance straight ahead. We've got in the S&P, we've got resistance at 2,800. We have resistance again at 2,820. But if this rally really does pick up, I think it can blow through those numbers without any problems. And as we have seen in the past, we've seen that we kind of work out where we think we should find some stiffer resistance. So I think that the fact that it's kind of holding here and it's just like, okay, what do I do? What do I do? It's like a market in flux to me. And again, they have to really determine, do we have enough money or do we have enough push to get it up through there, which again will then attract more buyers or force some shorts to kind of cave and cover. So I like you guys, I continue to hold the fact that I think just on a very near-term basis, which is nothing more than the balance of this week right now, that yeah, we should see lower prices. But until we get, as both AJ and Jim said, until we get some additional, and I'm going to put quotes around it saying comfort news, that I think that people are going to sit on the edge a little bit and they're not ready to fully commit or jump in. And then other trading will take over. Or again, as we've seen, we get a lot of surprises in the terms of news, particularly with the government that's totally in flux and very questionable right now. I don't think that the market can really ignore that for much longer before it really has to come into how can that interrupt the bull? How can that really turn our productive economic picture sour? And so I just think there's too many givens that are still out there unknown or that can turn this thing around. But I do think that right now, yep, the bull is still alive. And therefore, because there's a lot of indecision, as both AJ and Jim stated, we could be sideways for a whole lot longer. let's now just kind of move along. And we're going to go down to another question, which was that question about, basically, let me just kind of tune in a little bit. So for the questions on the question number one, the higher and the lower, the higher respondents, excuse me, we're saying that the market's oversold, it should go up. Number two was trumped. We're going to let that one figure itself out. We have options expiration week, which is usually an up week. That's also a truism. The Friday reversal leads to a bounce. But the lower respondents said the economy slowed down. No new jobs growth and basically saying it's over. The jobs needed to go to the highest and I think maybe higher for a more bullish trend. Market topped out months ago. Global growth slowdown, which could be a real one. I think that one is kind of being with that pre-show. excuse me, that still hangs out there. A reversion to the mean, that would be right down your alley there, Jim. And these are the lower respondents. So some interesting stuff.
I can give you, let me give you a quick example of that reversion to the mean idea that I kind of.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Boeing. About a week or two ago, I was on a speaking to somebody, and basically it was up in the 440 area, and the 200-day moving average was 356. And basically, just like I did when Amazon was up at 2,000 and the moving average is at 1,500, I was indicating that might not be a bad time to consider the collar strategy. And then a hypothetical example was selling the Boeing 470 call and taking the premium and buying the 430 put, and basically bracket the company between 470 and 430 until the options expire. Now, obviously, I didn't know there was going to be plane crashes, but it's amazing how things happen to make these things go back to their mean. And today we went down to 365, which is an earshot from 358. Yes. And obviously the guys that are hedged at 430 are in a lot better economic condition than the ones who are in there at 390 where it is now. So again, when you get overbought or oversold from those averages, I definitely look at that as an opportunity, because we're in a probability and an odds business. And I just like the odds and the probability when you get extended like that.
And I love that strategy. That one worked for a very nice profit, I'm going to say. Very, very nice profit. And again, I agree with you. We particularly with a company such as Boeing, you could sit there and say, wow, it's really kind of sitting up there pulling at the stars. What is it going to do? And why is it going to do it? And you're right. God forbid we'd be able to predict airline crashes, because that's pretty negative. But because we can't, that sudden jolt, that sudden news is going to produce that move that we're out there looking for. But that was great. And I like that strategy quite a bit. And I hope those that are listening took that one to heart and wrote it down. Question number four today is, which trading platforms or brokers do you like the best for executing your trades? Now, what we got is TD Direct Investing or Thinkorswim, TradingView, TastyTrade, which is their primary platform, Interactive Brokers, Edward Jones. We got a lot of Thinkorswim, a couple of Schwab's, et cetera, et cetera. So I think this may have been on a previous week as well, but we'll go ahead and repeat. AJ.
Well, being in the options world, Thinkorswim, I know the actual folks who originally developed that. They were ex-floor traders when the options market went predominantly electronic, who got together and put together that software and then later were purchased out by TD Ameritrade. Mm-hmm. So I like the Thinkorswim platform, especially because you can go to TD Ameritrade and open up a complimentary account and get access to Thinkorswim without ever funding that account. So I like the Thinkorswim platform. I don't like the commission structure of TD Ameritrade. So I actually use the Thinkorswim just as I described, along with some other paid for options analysis software in order to do my analysis. But I'm also a longtime TradeStation user. But the drawback to TradeStation is they have this software you need to learn how to use called Easy Language, which was the biggest misnomer ever, because it's not easy at all unless you have a computer programming background. I've had students who have disappeared for a couple of years trying to figure out Easy Language. I'm actually a big fan right now of Interactive Brokers. I do all my options analysis in the evenings when the markets are closed. And then when I'm actually going to be doing my trades, I have it brought down to some very simple planning and steps that you can analyze with any broker. And right now, the one I'm using is Interactive Brokers a lot. But I'm not actually tied to Interactive Brokers. Whoever's got the best support, you know, cheapest commissions, that's who I'm interested in at the time. And I like that nowadays with the rules, you can very quickly move your whole portfolio from one broker to another. So that's my 2 cents on brokers.
I'm going to say it's more like 25 cents.
No, very, sorry.
Very, very good stuff. No, that was good. It was all good. Jim?
Well, I don't have a real opinion on it one way or the other, but I am aware that Interactive Broker seems to be one of the best as far as commissions are concerned. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but like I say, that's out of my wheelhouse. So I would say that my only passing knowledge as far as the least expensive and that type of thing would be the Interactive Brokers. But I think in this day and age, squeezing the quarter until the eagle screams is probably not the most advantageous thing to use your time on.
I agree with the squeezing the eagle. I like that. Jim, you always come up with the good ones. I like that one a lot. I also use Thinkorswim, which is TOSS, and primarily, as AJ stated, the two gentlemen that started it were OEX crowd traders. They were options market makers on the SIBO, and when it came time to leave the floor, they were ready because they had designed the Thinkorswim platform. Now, as I hear, that when it came time, the platform became very, very successful. And again, as an options trader, I think there is not a better platform except the Tastyworks, which happened to be written and designed by the same gentleman who produced Thinkorswim. So, you know, six of one, half dozen of the other. Thinkorswim was sold to TD Ameritrade against the opinion of the founders. They did not want to sell. They were very pleased with what they had done, but then they had no option because they let the company go public. Once a company's public and another public company comes in, you can be forced to sell. And that's the case. That's what happened. But I do use the Thinkorswim platform to trade. I have two very large core positions, and I like the access that TD Ameritrade gives me in order to get in there and to handle what I need to do. And the fact that I can, use both futures and options to just manage those positions over the long term. Now, as a day trader in futures, I use NinjaTrader, which I find to be quite a good platform for its purpose. Again, my purpose is to get in and get from San Francisco to Chicago or to New Jersey to those computers, servers, as quickly as I possibly can. NinjaTrader has been very stable, very dependable. I have no problems getting my orders in and quickly and making my price. I've not had where NinjaTrader will crash. So I've had a lot of success with it. And I for trading futures, and that could be Forex or indexes, I like it. I like NinjaTrader probably the best. And again, depending on who you're plugging into on the outside as far as brokerage, you can get some pretty sweet deals in terms of commissions. When I balance it against what Thinkorswim or TD Ameritrade charges, they're not very competitive, but that's TD Ameritrade. What I'd like to do is to possibly just go back and, again, round robin fashion, what we're thinking, what possibly we believe can be implemented, what some traders, or if you have something that you're particularly interested this week, and what has struck you as very doable in terms of trades. Let's give that a turn.
All right. You,
AJ.
All right. So my focus has always been options. And, with options, one of the beautiful parts versus, say, for instance, well, any derivative, but with equity options, with the equity itself, you can only either go long or go short. So you're playing a directional game. And those are the only two sort of strategies you have. And if the market goes sideways, you're either stuck, focused on the computer day trading small, tiny movements, or you're not doing anything. You're in an all cash position. With options, I think last time the mathematicians played around, they had 27 different ways to put the strategies together. And you can trade market going up, market going down, or you can, like, for instance, I agree with Jim where he said, the market's not going to go down anytime soon. I agree with that. And you can make that decision. You can say, well, it's not going to go down, but it could go sideways or go up, which I think it's going to go do one of those, probably more likely sideways, but it could also, as we all agreed on, go up. So in that case, you could trade strategies that is the not down direction. You can also make money on changes on volatility and make money on just time passing by, which is what a lot of what I'm doing right now is. So what I'm focusing right now on is very similar to what Jim said, which is those collar positions where we're going to be selling some premium at the top side and then collaring ourselves at the bottom side. And that way, you've got a real nice channel that if you go sideways on, you're just going to collect premiums every cycle. And if it goes to the top side, you're going to, expire at your max profit. And if it goes to the bottom side, you're insured as far as it goes down dollar for dollar. So I really enjoy those positions. And that's what I'm doing. And that's what I'm teaching a lot of my program participants to do, given the current market climate of a lot of sideways movement and possibly some up movement. But let's be protected to the downside. So I don't know if you want me to go into specifics or you want me to pass it to Jim and get one specific perhaps loaded up?
Yes, that would be great because cool. My question that I was going to add that I think many people would be interested in is, and this would be from both of you guys, you also as well, Jim, where and what products do you want to use that collar in? Are there particular markets or particular stocks or indexes that you favor over others?
Great. I'll let Jim take this one and then I'll come back if that's all right and I'll give you an
Absolutely.
Example.
Jim, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to be clear. A collar is not a panacea by any means because it does take you out of the upside. So if the market does take off, that collar, that call that you've sold is going to limit your upside. So it's not Nirvana or Shangri-La or anything even near that. What it is it's for people who want to have some kind of an idea that their equity would be range bound. So if a guy bought Boeing at 300 in December and it goes up to 440, 450, he's made 50% on his money. and let's say his nickname isn't Porky, right? So he's not a pig. And he'd like to stabilize that very large equity move, and he's concerned because he notices the 200-day average is at 354. So he makes a decision that he's willing to cap it at 470 and put a floor at 430 in the hypothetical example. So again, in this case, having hedged it was a brilliant idea, but had Boeing gone to 500, he would have had an opportunity loss between 470 and 500. So the bottom line is when do you do the collar? You do it when you'd like to make sure you have some kind of parameters around your equity. That would either because you're nervous coming out of the gate, you collar it right away, or it could be after you have a gain. The time you wouldn't generally collar it is after a big tank in the market, because that's like trying to put a Band-Aid on something that is already a mortal wound. You know, right. It's not going to help you. So right. Again, you know, it's like anything else. I know the tools. A lot of people know the tools. It's when you use the tool and how effective your timing is that'll determine whether the collar or any strategy is worth anything.
Very, very good. I kind of use a combination a little bit, and that's based on the fact that if I'm going to be stepping into options, or if I'm going to be trying to protect something that I'm already working, is that I'm taking an opinion. So we're discussing, you know, a market basically moving sideways and how we want to kind of pick our top and protect our bottom in terms of movement, or, for, you know, that, it, like Jim said, it blasts through your top line or it falls through your bottom line. I do it a little bit differently. It's like if I'm going to be long, and again, since Boeing seems to be our ticket at the moment, and you bought Boeing, I would tend to just put that top side in. And then again, using the collar, basically the way you stated it, Jim, is that if I'm thinking that it's too far away from the 200-day, using your example, how do I want to protect it? I love it. The collar works perfectly. Because
yeah, but in the example of Boeing, after it drops $80, is not the optimum time to put it on.
Exactly. Right. Oh, I agree with you. I agree with you. And so we're making
That's why you can't take a strategy, put a blindfold on, and use the strategy blindly. Whether right, it be writing right. the options, buying the options, hedging. Right. There is no way you can put a blindfold and just throw it at the wall.
And that's a great point. So we'll leave Boeing alone for the moment, and maybe let's talk about the S&P. Now, what do we want to do with the S&P? And if we're thinking that the S&P is at, you know, we're putting on shorts here, and what do I want to do if it pops to 2,800? Where do I want to, you know, to set things up where I think that the market's going to come down? And I think you can use that same analogy or that same type of a strategy. Again, you know, the S&P is up. What, 100? No. Well, definitely $84 from, no, let me get that straight. It's up $60 from the low on Friday. That's a pretty big S&P move for me anyway. In any case, I think that using the collar and a put, you know, a put and a call can be very helpful. If you're just going to be straight directional, then just pick your direction and put the option on. That'll reflect what you think is going to happen. Let's move back to AJ though.
Well, I want to back up Jim 100%. You have no idea. I mean, you probably have an idea, but the listeners maybe have no idea how many times somebody has come up to me after, say, for instance, a public speaking event, and they said, you know, I did this strategy, let's just pick one, vertical spreads, and I learned how to do vertical spreads, and I did it for 10 months straight, and I was making 10% every month, and then on the 11th month, I did the same vertical spreads, and not only did I lose all the money I gained in the first 10 months, I lost half of my portfolio, and you know, and then usually that'll be followed up with, so now I want you to just teach me covered calls. I heard covered calls are the way to go, and I always try to, and it's always a uphill battle, but it's not the strategy, right? And that's kind of what Jim was saying. There's no one strategy. In fact, what I feel like we are as investors and traders is we're pattern recognition people. We identify a pattern, and then it's like matching the correct strategy to the pattern. So focusing on a single strategy is like focusing on how to use a tool like a wrench. But if you're presented with a screw, you're not going to, if you put the wrench on the screw, you're just going to mess up the screw, right? So being able to know which tool fits which pattern is really what our job is as investors. It's not about learning how to use a single tool, because you wouldn't call a plumber who only knows how to use a single pipe wrench, because he may need to use a blowtorch, and then he'd be no good of a plumber. He'd be screwing up all your plumbing. So I just wanted to agree with Jim on that, that there's no one strategy that always works all the time. You have to match the strategy with what you're seeing. And I think you were saying that too, Michael. I'm going to share my screen just for a second, because this is one, and Jim also alluded to this. So let me just see if I can do this really quick. I think I click on this button right here. Yep. And then I pick on this button. This is my Thinkorswim platform. This is Ericsson that I've been trading with the same kind of strategy for the last 4 months. And as you can see, I found a candidate that really likes to trade between a certain level of support and resistance. So as we were talking about range bound, now I'm up almost 30% on a trade that's a good, like say 40% of my portfolio with this. And so that's really setting me up really nice for the year. And I'm only 4 months into this trade. So these are the type of candidates I tend to look for, is these range bound ones that, like Jim said, we like to put on our collar in times of peace, not in times of war. So every time this thing hits a top, I'm collaring it to the bottom side where the collar is the cheapest, and where I could even use that protective option trade as a source of income, not just a source of protection. So I look for these candidates that have already shown a track record over the previous 6 months of sideways channeling. I look, a little bit into these underlying equities to see if, you know, what happens during earnings season, what happens when they, if and when they release dividends. But I like these long time plays because I like babysitting trades rather than constantly every cycle having to find new candidates to focus on.
Good stuff. Very, very good stuff. We still have quite a bit of time. So I think I'd like to maybe just switch over, and I'm going to ask a couple of questions that people have included in this week's survey. And one was saying, what research companies do you use for recession forecasts? And I personally don't use any, but let's put that out there and see if either you, AJ, or Jim have any that come to mind.
Not me. I do my own analysis every evening after the markets close to get an idea of, before I start looking at any individual candidate, I do what I call a broad market analysis to see what we did in the last trading session. And if there was supposed to be any sort of recession forecast, it would come from myself.
And Jim?
Yeah, I look at the economic calendar, and when things like retail sales and durable goods and capital goods and construction spending and new home sales and import prices and housing starts and all the rest of them and ISM manufacturing numbers, you know, I kind of look to numbers to tell me what's going on. I'm not much of the crystal ball. Like in 2019, we're going to have a recession. In 2020, right, we're going to have a recession. We're going to have a recession when the recession happens, and not until then. And when they happen, they're not going to hide away. The economic calendar will be printing them. And if they don't print those numbers, looking for something that's not being printed is dodgy. So bottom line is I would look at the economic and the Fed auction calendar, and I would keep an eye on those numbers and get an idea if they're growing, shrinking, or stable. And then I would take it from there. Mm-hmm. And of course, quarterly earnings is another thing. If you see when they announce earnings, top line growth is tanking, that wouldn't be good. So bottom line is they'll tell you. It won't be a secret.
Right. You're right. They will definitely tell you. The second part of that question was, is what strategies would we use for hedging? It's like hedging in a recession. I don't know. Me personally, it's like, I don't know, because I agree with what Jim has just said. How can you really forecast that, oh, we're going to go into recession here? I mean, I think that there are analysts out there that attempt to do that, but does not usually come through because there's just too many factors that would be unknown. And so you're basically stating, it's like, well, this is going to happen to interest rates. This is what you think is going to happen here. And this is what's going to force the economy to drop into a recession. I think for me, if I was to say what research companies, it's not necessarily a research company, since like AJ, I do my own analysis. But when you're looking at things technically and you're feeling that the market's at a top or the market can roll over, different things that can start to happen, then you can start to piece it together and say, well, what could actually create economy to roll over. And I think a lot of times it happens to do with, I think a lot of things are coming out from the government, of course, and what could be coming out from the Fed and what the Fed's actions are, et cetera, et cetera. But I also think that we can look at cycles. And I think cycles can have a very large play in, particularly economic cycles, have a large play in determining when economies will roll, when they'll dip, when they might continue to have strength. And one that came out, you know, Friday was the job numbers. And I think it's
that job number is no good. That's why the thing is right back up again. 20,000 is a joke. It has to be tied to the shutdown and the weather. I mean, you know, you don't go from 300,000 to 20 without any mitigating factor. So I'd be very shocked to put, you know, too much credence into that number because, again, the weather and the shutdown must have had some effect on that.
That's just my opinion.
And obviously it's the opinion of everybody else because you've run right back up through the roof as if it never happened. So.
In fact, you ran right up to the roof as if it never happened on the day that it did happen.
Right. So obviously people are going on saying that that number is like, what do they call that? A fat thumb? Or a fat finger? A trade that came through that shouldn't have come through. They said somebody had a fat finger. You know, it's like a trade that, you know, it's a bad print.
So in your opinion then, Jim, what would you think?
I'm saying it's not going to be a secret when we're going into a recession because, like I say, the numbers are going to be printed all over the place if you read them. You know, the companies have earnings and they come out with earnings and they tell you what their top line growth is and they tell you what their net earnings are. And obviously, you know, if those numbers start changing and then, of course, all these economic numbers that come out every week, you know, you're not going to have a recession on a Tuesday unless there's deterioration.
Right.
And deterioration takes time.
I do agree. And I don't think that what we're really trying to put out there is to say that someone could predict next Wednesday the recession will start. I agree with you that's basically fodder. You know, forget it. That's not going to happen.
Anybody home?
We lost him for a second.
Oh, yeah. It looks like Michael.
But one of the key things I want to throw out there as well is something that Jim's pointing out really clearly. And by the way, the guys at Option Professor are top notch education folks. So one thing that Jim pointed out that I want to just elaborate on a little bit more is that he's talking about looking at the numbers. Because I remember actually giving a live event in 2007. And I remember where the numbers were clearly telling us that something was amiss. And Citibank was announcing that everything was all right. And literally a few days later, the numbers didn't lie and everything went amiss. So it's important to look at the numbers and almost ignore, especially if somebody's got skin in the game, like a Citibank or at the time, Bear Stearns. You got to watch out when you just listen to what people are saying. Look at the economic, I couldn't agree more. Look at the economic calendar, look at your charts, look at the numbers and get your conclusion about what the market's doing from those numbers, not necessarily what people are telling you.
Yeah, and there's always an overvaluation of something, you know, whether real estate or in equity, like I would say equity prices in 2000 during that crash, it was obviously the .com having no earnings, mm-hmm. obviously ridiculous. And in 2008, it was the leveraging of real estate, no money down, and, you know, variable loans. And I mm-hmm. think this time, you know, if you're really looking for what would probably be the instigator, it's going to be the bond market, because you've got $9 trillion in corporate debt out there. A third of it is in triple B's. Well, if triple B's go down and get downgraded one level, then everybody who owns them, who is required to have investment grade bonds in their portfolio, would have to sell them. Mm-hmm. And then in addition to the third of the $9 trillion being in those type of bonds, another half of them are in junk and leverage loans, which by definition are risky. So again, like Buffett says, when the tide changes, you'll see who's swimming naked. And I think there's a lot of people swimming naked in the bond market. And if you ever bought a bond, it's very easy to buy a bond. But then if you ask them what the bid is, a lot of times they'll say there is no bid. We have to put it out for market. Now, if most of the people who buy these bonds are market makers and they're all trying to get out of things, it's going to be a liquid situation. And when you have liquidity issues is when you have the crises. So again, I would think that the culprit this time is going to be the corporate bond market. And there's a lot of those bonds coming due in the next 1 to 3 years. And so that would be what I'd keep an eye on as well.
I can't agree more. With respect to hedging, you know, we've been talking about, both of us have been talking about strategies of making sure that when things are going really good, that's the best time to put in hedging strategies. You know, just a simple protective strategy down at some level, protective option is fantastic. Or, you know, a lot of our strategies we can structure upside down so that we get exercised into an all cash position if we go below a certain level as well. So again, this is why I can't emphasize more about how nice options are, because we have all these variations that we can put these things together in different combinations and build and basically architect the strategy based on what we think is going to happen and what's happening right now. So,
yeah, and a lot of times when the markets go in the tank like they did in December, people would be very nervous about their positions. And if they all sold out in December, they'd be very unhappy today. Strategy that they may have considered is getting out of their stock position, which was killing them, but replacing them immediately with long-term calls. Correct. There you would have a situation where your cash risk would be limited. So you went to bed at night knowing exactly what you had at risk. And then, of course, when the market bounces back to 2,800, you haven't gotten out of the market entirely while it was down. You actually replaced it at least with some long-term calls, which would bring the portfolio back up. So as you're saying, you know, you can use these options as a tool for defense, offense, increase your risk or reduce your risk. And the more you know about these things, I've been doing them for decades and decades and decades, so it's a second language. But I always want to say, no matter if I did it for decades or last week, you know, you still have to have the proper timing to make the tools, you know, the strategies effective.
Yep, I agree. Hey, listen, there's one more feedback that I think Michael was going to get to, and that was the person who said that he or she tried several platforms and discussing whether a platform has what they need, has too much. You know, I find right now that, you know, platforms are where a lot of the brokers are focusing their time and efforts. The person that has the most bells and whistles gets a certain amount of the clientele that is, if you will, attracted by shiny objects. But I agree with you that they can be overwhelming. What I have found is that a lot of times these the engineers that put together those platforms for the brokers make really nice tutorial videos. And that's one of the criteria I use, going back to our original discussion. The criteria I use for picking a broker is how well can they support me in learning their platform. And all of these platforms do have some sort of learning curve involved with them. But a lot of times you can even, because these brokers are really dying for your business, you can actually contact them and they'll do a live tutorial for you on a screen sharing software. So my knee-jerk reaction is, sadly, you're not going to find, especially in these days, the most simple like platform. But do contact the broker. And Jim, you might have 2 cents on this, but do contact the broker and use all the learning, you know, tools that they give you for learning, and take advantage of every single one, especially if you can get somebody live on the phone to show you around and really highlight the areas of the platform that you want to use and ignore all the rest. What do you think, Jim?
Yeah, I think, again, I'm not an expert at all with regards to what platform to use. I try to focus all my time on, you know, the probabilities of what I'm looking at.
The actual trading.
And there's a lot going on out there. So I really like to use these moving averages. And they're not, again, they're not a panacea either, but they can kind of, they're based on price and time, which has to be better than Joe Blow's opinion. And because they're factual, right? Time is fact and so is price, you know? So I like to have something that's made out of fact to go along with all the hyperbole you're going to get by turning on radio, TV, or this place, right?
Exactly.
So again, and then I like to look for extensions, you know, overbought, oversold, you know, 20 to 50% away from these averages tends to be an area, you know, where probabilities might be switching a little bit, which I find interesting. And, you know, then basically look at the charts and get some kind of parameters on where the market's been and where it, you know, what has been set up. Like, again, I think the second half of the year could be very interesting because, you know, the gold has a ceiling at around 1400. If it ever got above that, that could open up the gates there. I was kind of constructive on the gold from September of last year to recently. And then I told them people, you know, that it slowed down here. You might want to hedge or grab some money. And then, like I say, on the S&P, you've got a nice parameter of 2820 and 2680, whichever way it breaks out of there might be interesting. And I mentioned the Russell at 1500 and the transport to 10,000 look like temporarily lows at this point. So there's a parameter there. And the VIX at 18. So there's parameters that are getting set up that I think could be interesting. To me, the markets are waiting for a couple of things that are going to be very big. One is, of course, the China deal one way or the other. And the other is Q1 earnings. And when the Q1 earnings come out, we're going to try to find out if this market is overvalued or not. Because, you know, they're not going to be able to be killing last year's earnings more than likely, because last year's earnings were factoring in the tax cut. And so you're going to have earnings comparisons until the fourth quarter. They're going to probably be a little dodgy. How dodgy they are is going to be important. The retail sales came out today. It looks like it's stabilizing, but they also increased the drop from December from 1.2% to 1.6%. So, you know, the economic numbers are kind of all over the place. I think the big thing to watch is inflation, because nobody thinks there's going to be any inflation. And the bond market is actually no inflation at all. What I'm seeing wages picking up very strongly, especially if you factor out some of these things and get to the real core of it all, which is, you know, some people tell me it's over 5% inflation on wages. And this week we have CPI coming out and PPI, so it'll be interesting to see. When I go out and shop for things, I definitely think prices have gone up. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they're reflected in the CPI yet. So, you know, if sales have dropped, you know, how would a company make the same amount of money if the sales are dropping? Well, use your common sense. They'd have to increase the price. And when are you going to increase price? When the employment is 3.7%, or are you going to wait for the recession? If you're going to increase prices this first quarter of this year, this would be the time to do it. And if those inflationaries pick up, as well as the wages pick up, this bond market is not prepared for that. And I don't know what the stock market is either. We'll have to find out. But I think the inflation number and the Q1 earnings, and then, of course, the China deal would be the trifecta of what I think will make us have the next major move.
Yep. Well, I think at this point, before we have some just last words, I think I'll take a couple of seconds here and tell people how to get more information about me, and then you'll do the same, Jim.
Sure.
So, guys, you can go to the website Trading Trainer. So that's TradingTrainer.com. And everything you wanted to know about the products we offer there, including this one, this premium selling program, where we've got some screeners and some online workshops and some trades that we follow that you can follow as well, is all explained there, as well as some white papers that I've written. I get really nerdy about some of my white papers, and they're all available right on that website. You can also reach out to us. I'm AJ@TradingTrainer.com. Jim?
Yeah. Well, optionprofessor.com is the website. And at the website, you can get the link to the weekly market update, where we go over our opinion and our views on the stock market, on the bond market interest rates, on the gold market and the US dollar, and the price of oil. A lot of those markets have a ceiling on them right now, and things could change dramatically. Soybeans have a ceiling at around 950. You got oil at 60. You've got the gold at 1400. All of that could change, and the dollar range, 98.94. All that could change in the second half of the year. And we're trying to talk about it now before those changes may happen. Also, you can shoot me an email if you have any question on anything or would like to talk to me directly at optionprofessor@gmail.com. And it was great being with you, AJ, and Michael as well. And thanks a lot for having me today.
Yeah. Michael, I think you just came back. Do you want to explain how people can get in more contact with you?
Yes. Hopefully Xfinity will cooperate and keep the internet up in my area. I just got a report that it wasn't going to be up for another 2 hours. And then suddenly it came back. Again, I'm Michael Filigar. I'm with Logical Signals. optionprofessionals.com. I apologize for the internet outage, but hey, that's the age in which we live, and that's not something under our control. The big thing that I wanted to just pass on that is important, I think, for people that are day trading and are looking for a possibility of using an algorithm. And I'm working together with an ex-member of my own trade room who is a superior trader. And we designed a auto trader that can be used in all of the equity and oil and most of the futures markets. And it is now live. And if you would like to check it out, you need to get in contact with me, and then I could set you up so that you're able to see. We're going to have an open house actually on Wednesday of this week. And so, but you need to sign up on the website. And that website is www.candlelighttrading.com. And you can send an email to that website and actually just say that you heard of the offer on the CrowdForecast News, on the Timing Research Show. And we should be able to respond with the access that you'll, or the code that you'll need to get into the room. But please do come in and look. Thus far, the name of this particular auto trader is Toby, and Toby has been knocking them dead in the futures markets, particularly this morning. This morning in the Dow, just trading a one lot, it was up over $450, almost $500 within the first 20 minutes. Now, basis, that's the move itself. We did see that. But it was quite nice to see that an algorithm was able to catch it as well. Thank you guys for stepping in and stepping up to the plate and filling in that gap without a moderator. I really appreciate that very much. And thank you, David, for giving me an additional opportunity to come on and to moderate.
All right. Thanks, guys. Great show. Just a quick reminder to everyone, please be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory. And you can also go to timingresearch.com. to get any of the past reports or past shows there. Be sure to join us tomorrow for the next episode of Analyze Your Trade. Michael will be back for that one, and Mike Bassani will be on that one as well. That'll be tomorrow, Tuesday, March 12th at 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And I just want to thank everyone again for this episode. AJ Brown of TradingTrainer.com, Jim Kenny of OptionProfessor.com, and Michael Filigera of LogicalSignals.com. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.